My name is Bernadette Simeon, and I'm from the California Association of Social Rehab Agencies. And my question is, given that there are some in, from Ron's case there in Pennsylvania, there are already some indicators for residential. I would like to know if there's any indicators specifically for residential that are treatment-based. Because community care licensing residentials are mostly custodial. And there are some programs, residential programs in California that are treatment-based, which are very, very different. Based on your presentation, you need in the do's and don'ts, that they have to be applied to the service type. And so I just wanted to know if there's anything out there and where are we going with this in California, because it's very different.
We did discuss a little bit of the very specific types of service areas, so I'm going to let California respond.
So one thing that we need to look at is that the starting point is our health and safety licensing regulations to make sure that the environment is safer and healthy for the clients. And in child care, we know that that results in positive outcomes, and intuitively we know that. In terms of the specific services that might be provided for mental health or dementia patients and others, then that's where you sort of get into the more specific client need. And those will show up in the statistical analysis. Those programs that are performing well with that client population, those that are not, and what we should be looking at. It won't remove the need for review of specific program type factors, perhaps if we're certified as a mental health facility and Department of Mental Health does the certification, we do the licensing, we'd still partner in that regard. Or it doesn't remove the need for some clients who are under the special medical provisions to be in our facilities for certain oversight there. It won't remove that need.
Yeah, and just to add, so especially in the social rehab community, there's the certification that the Department of Mental Health would have to have over the program. So, our tool would be looking at what CCL is responsible for. There's still a component that the Department of Mental Health obviously has over the treatment program itself. So it's a combination right now is how the review process works. So we're taking our piece and looking at it a little different way to do it. And we would customize the tool for the social rehab facilities that we monitor, that we would have a tool specific to that category. You know, the Department of Mental Health, of course, would still have to do their portion of the review in terms of looking at the program itself. So there's still, I know it's a little, you do have a category that has an extra piece to it, which is the certification process that adds a level of complexity, obviously, to the process. But our piece, we would still look specifically, though, at the social rehab facility and develop our indicators that way.
Okay. So my question is, so there's no counterpart of this problem in...
Ron, do you have that category where you've got a mental health treatment program that's certified in conjunction with a facility category?
He may be muted and he may be gone.
Okay.
But I would say from listening in yesterday, the statistical model will look at every regulation for every service type. And
I'm here. I just had great difficulty hearing the exchange.
So the question was, Ron, whether there's any counterpart on residential facilities.
Specifically, is there a social rehab facility in your side of the state, of the nation?
The modeling, whether the indicator system is in use for your social mental health residency facilities.
Well, there's two items to consider with that. There are distinct regulatory chapters that apply specifically to providing programmatic services to individuals with mental illness or intellectual disability. To my knowledge, with the exception of intellectual disability, there is no such indicator program in place in mental health services. But what it's important to understand is that the residential facilities that we regulate are not strictly limited to older adults. In fact, a great many of them also provide care exclusively to individuals with mental illness, individuals with intellectual disabilities, in some cases even individuals with head injury or traumatic brain injury. So the populations that receive services in the homes that we regulate would all reside in homes that could be subjected or eligible for our indicator system. And again, this is where it goes back to the population served is not nearly as important as the statistical methodology, because the statistical methodology can be applied to any chapter of regulations. It's simply a matter of determining which regulations are most associated with compliance overall. And so population-specific regulations don't come into play there unless the statistical method shows that those regulations are, in fact, indicators. So in other words, regardless of the regulation type, all regulations have equal weight for the purposes of measurement. And then once we do the statistical analysis, we then know which regulations are most closely associated with overall compliance.
So if I can, in lay terms, highlight that the very specific oriented regulations for your population will be considered in the model.
Okay. Yes, that's a good summary.
Hernando Sequeira from Southern California, San Bernardino County. Thank you for the presentation. Quick question. I think there is a curiosity in some of us about these key indicators, because we don't see them displayed in front of us, and nobody's talking about specific. So, like child care, there is 13 indicators, but nothing. We didn't see those indicators on the board.
Right.
So, what are we talking about?
One simple. I'm going to let Rick answer the detail answer, but for all of you, they're out on the table. We have 18 service types, and we currently have two key indicator tools for each service type. We've given you examples out there, and those also can be found on our website. And so you'll get more information on that.
Thank you so much. And my last question, very quickly, is if we can do this, and I think we will, California, how long will it take us to implement this in California? What is the anticipation?
That's a good question. You know, part of what we're trying to do, too, obviously the key indicator tool is a major piece of it. It allows us to gain a lot of efficiencies. There are statutes out there that kind of govern the frequency of inspection. And I know for a lot of you and us also, improving that frequency is critical. And that will take a law change in order to do that. Now, we're trying to move forward with the tool piece of this so that we can make sure we understand and have a good model in place. I think as this continues to roll, that we're in this pilot phase for at least a year, and we'll be working with our partners here to make sure we have a good model and system underneath that to support it, and then in the meantime continue to work towards looking at changing the law, which unfortunately I can't, there's not the crystal ball to know how quickly I can get that done, but you know, there's a lot of stakeholders that have been very supportive of that concept, and I know we'll continue to work with them.
Thank you. Yeah.
And Rick, take it away on the indicators.
Okay. I'll give you some examples, but I deliberately stayed away from it because I was concerned that if I addressed what the key indicators were, people would make the assumption that, oh, this is applicable to all service types, and that's not the case. It's, you know, it has to be specific to your particular service type. But in child care, some examples would be, and I mentioned this before, staff-child ratio, group size, director qualifications, teacher qualifications, child abuse clearances, hand washing, proper hand washing. Those are the types of things that, that you know, have appeared, you know, as part of the 13 indicators.
And to be very clear, it doesn't eliminate all of the other 2000-aught regulations. They're just indicators of compliance.
Right, right.
Will Sanford with Futures Explored. We run adult daycare or operate. And so the assumption under this is the regulations are based on reality and expectations. If I go to 1980, the assumption was an adult with a developmental disability required 100% supervision, probably wouldn't work, probably wouldn't live on their own. Today, people work independently, they travel independently, they live independently, but we are saddled with regulations that came from residential and assume that the residential model applied. And I heard you say that you needed to have regulations that meet the model that's being delivered. And I think that's one of the challenges we face is we apply key indicators. If it comes out of that bias, we are only holding back folks from being successful in the world that's out there. And that's really probably our biggest worry is as California develops that, that we're developing indicators that are leading to quality, positive lives, which is what California uses, the Lanterman Act. So I'd be interested in from Pennsylvania is whether they've dealt with the daycare side of the house versus purely residential in the adult world. And ultimately, it's a little bit insulting for the adults that I work with who attend those programs and say, I'm not in daycare. I direct my service. I tell you what I want to do. You help me do that. It's a support model, not a health and safety model. So at some point, I think in California, we have to have that pretty real conversation. Mm-hmm. Key indicators are used in our system. Right now, the National Core Indicators is a national standard that has come out for folks with developmental disabilities. So I think we have to figure out how to have that conversation in this process. Because again, I think we often hold back folks from being successful by how we assume what they need.
So if I can moderate this question a little bit, I'm going to ask California to respond to that, talk a little bit about the statistical modeling because we're not going to be looking at the inspections from before a certain date, which I think will apply here. Ron, yes or no, are adult daycare facilities, childcare world hates for it to be called daycare, so I'm not sure whether, are adult daycare facilities within your indicator system? Oh, excuse me, I think I have Ron muted.
I watch you mute him so much.
Right. Okay, Ron, you're unmuted.
I didn't take it personally. The short answer to that question is no. Older adult daily living centers are regulated by another state agency, and they are not part of the indicator system. But it sounds like the way that older adult daily living centers are that function in California is somewhat different than the way they function here. I know that indicators would work in our current in under our adult daily living center regulations, but I don't know. Again, without learning more about California's regs, I can't say.
And California, do you have?
I mean, a couple of things. Obviously, if there are concerns about the statutes and regulations that especially govern the adult day kinds of programs, that if there's continued needs to look at changing that, you know, we develop the model using the existing regulations, and we would be specific to the particular category of licensure. And if that's not a good representation of the client and what's going on, then we need to have more discussions. You know, obviously, I mean, even in the children's residential area, there's a huge effort on congregate care to, you know, re-look at it. AB 12 was passed, and there's a significant amount of work going on right now to look at how we need to do child welfare differently in the state. So, I mean, there may be a similar kind of thing that needs to happen in the adult day area.
And remember, with all of our key indicators, part of our process is to have stakeholders in that field weigh in. And we talked about adding and looking at some additional regulations that may be important. And so we can work with you on that.
Yeah, we'll switch off to this side and then Linda.
Hi, thank you for the very clear presentation. I do have a question. My name is Jody Marksmer from Los Angeles, and I understand the current scheme regarding how often facilities are visited for inspection at this point. And the question that I have as far as the key indicator idea, it sounds like every 3 years you're looking at a more complete inspection, but how often would you look for there being a key indicator type of inspection? And as far as California, is that amount of time either one reasonable related to our financial situation and two passable within the legislature?
Well, I'll answer, you know, just generically. It really depends on the particular state and what is their expectations in law about, you know, when licensing reviews have to occur. I mean, it could be a year, it could be 2 years. It all depends. So when in designing it, I was always going under the assumption that you know, it was on at least a yearly basis. But you know, it depends. It would be specific to the state. Would be specific to the state. So,
as part of what Rick was talking about, where every 3 years you kind of do this refresh, if you will, mm-hmm. in looking at what your indicators are. So, you know, as we're developing our model, you know, we started off with looking at citations, looking at the frequency of citations, weighting those, and developing our initial set of key indicator tools for the seven major categories, and that was a starting point. But you know, but we recognize that, you know, you just don't do that one time and expect that to play out over time. That you're having to constantly look at what's happening. Laws can change. You know, there can be specific kinds of things that happen in the category that may affect compliance, that you have to have a pulse on that all the time. So, you know, part of what we're trying to do in developing this model is look at those kinds of things to see. So kind of what Rick was talking about, when you look in general, 3 years might be a good benchmark to do a full comprehensive. We might find that maybe we needed to do it at two, maybe we need to do it at four, but you know, but we kind of have a benchmark with what Rick has done in terms of research. From a financial standpoint and looking at, you know, how much time savings do we have, how, you know, what are we going to be able to do, there's a lot of unknown factors in that that's hard to predict right now, but in our concept, that we would have that built into what we do, so that the frequency obviously is an important part of what we need to be able to do in getting out on a much more routine basis from once every 5 years, where we are now, to, you know, our ultimate goal is to get back to an annual inspection and do that in a way that's meaningful and thoughtful and as efficient as we can, gather that information, and then continue to apply it against the tool. So, and that's why building the model includes having this data system underneath it, that we're constantly getting information into that system so that we can look and make sure that we can refresh what we're doing on an ongoing basis.
So I'll take the, you have a follow-up?
Yeah, and just a comment. So it sounds like then that a really important part of implementing this, the system, is changing the frequency with which inspections are currently occurring, and what that frequency is not yet quite set, but it's going to be more often.
So for me, I think it's really important that we improve the frequency of inspection, and I think in using this tool, it's important that the frequency increases also. So, you know, we want to get to annual inspections. Without a law change, we're trying, and you know, of course, given the economic situation of the state and the challenges that we have right now, we're doing as much as we can. We'll continue to do that. And as this matures, and hopefully as we can look at potential law changes, that'll decide ultimately what we're going to be doing.
Thank you.
And Linda, I'll give you. We'll give you the last word for the morning session.
And you're going to tell me I have to be quick, right? I'm Linda Smith with NACRA, and I want to pose a challenge. And maybe this is the appropriate thing that I am the last one to you guys here in California. As you know, we're all very big fans of what you all are doing here and the work that you're doing. I want to sort of put out on the other side of the table that maybe in the work you're doing, you begin to gather data on sort of the consequences for inspections, as well as just what are the violations, the indicators, etc. I was asked a question a couple of weeks ago because there's a case in Georgia, and a child died in a van in the heat. Okay, somebody called me and said, "What's the appropriate consequence? Sanction, fine, whatever for that?" Well, it's high risk. There's no question. Hot summer, kid in van. Child had been there, I think, 7 or 8 hours. And I didn't have an answer for that. And the reason I didn't, because this particular program had been cited for this before and fined $200. And obviously a $200 fine for that kind of violation wasn't significant enough to change behavior. So I think if we're looking at licensing, and I know it's not your thing, but I'm looking at your stellar crew here and thinking that they can take on this challenge of, while you're building a system out, to build the system out in such a manner that you begin to look at consequences as well as the indicators and what seems to work on the other side of the equation, because I think I was totally struck that I have no answer for that question. Obviously, I said $200 is not enough, but what is enough to change behavior? And is a sanction enough, or is technical assistance needed? What are we doing on the other side to fix it once we find it?
I'm smiling at you, Linda, because we're having the same conversation in California. And I think you're always there with your finger on the pulse. One of the things I did want to mention in regard to that is that Rick and others have talked about all the regulations have to be in play. And in licensing, we're sort of equal measure prevention, compliance, and enforcement. On the enforcement end, we have to have enough teeth in our regulations that bad actors can be dealt with appropriately, whether they're out of business or heavily fined or whatever happens. In terms of compliance, we're trying to help providers do the best job that they can and be in compliance. We don't want the regulations to be a surprise to them. Our key indicator tools will be published. We want them to do a good job because, as Rick said, if they're doing a good job and they're in compliance, we can say our clients you know, are going to have better outcomes. And then there's the prevention piece. Well, in California, that's been really a problem. We've lost a lot of our prevention resources. So Jeff has asked us to figure out new ways to help deliver prevention and training resources to our providers. We have an online orientation. My staff in the front row here have worked on that now for family child care and soon for centers in Spanish and English. It's really cool. NARA's looking at these issues of what is needed out there. We want to take our civil penalty funds and use it to buy training for providers so that when we go out with the key indicator tools and we see a problem in the plan of correction, part of the solution can be to take some additional training that doesn't exist now. A little preview, we've included that in our application for Race for the Top for child care, but we're looking at it for all service types. And so what we're looking at is a complete system where it's continuous quality improvement, and it's not one piece over the other, but that we have to get back in balance, and we have to use data to give us the best possible information to make decisions. And it's a partnership between the communities, our families, our stakeholders going forward. And that we don't want to be subject to just the fiscal policies that come down due to cuts. We want to come through with a thoughtful model. It may not be perfect yet. It's an iterative model. It's a continuous quality improvement model that will get better every year as we go forward with these partnerships. And that's what we intend to do. The details, like Ron says, will change over time, but the method and the model is what we're trying to put forward. So thank you for your comment on that. We're looking at that issue.
Yeah, Gloria is absolutely right. You know, this is one component of a comprehensive system. And, you know, it's something that, like Gloria was talking about, we recognize there's other pieces to these things, and training, both external and even internal training, is really important to make sure not only we're doing the best job that we can, but we can make licensees successful in this process too. So we don't want to just go around with a big stick and hitting people over the head with it. We want to make sure that we can help them be successful too. So you know, this there's a lot of focus on what we're doing with key indicators and that process, and it's definitely a major piece of this, but there are those other components that we're also working on that we want to improve and make sure that, you know, we have a balance in everything that we do.